Good morning. One of my favorite New Testament books is the Gospel of Mark. Perhaps it is a favorite of yours as well. Mark's Gospel is unique in its emphasis upon Jesus' actions more than on his teaching. Mark is the shortest of the four Gospels. It begins and ends abruptly. There are no birth narratives as in Matthew and Luke, and he doesn't go back to eternity past as does John in John chapter 1. It is fast-paced, and the emphasis is upon action. We see that in chapter 1 and verse 1 where Mark introduces his theme in verse 1, the beginning of the gospel about Jesus Christ, the Son of God. He introduces the good news, the news that God has done something about sin and death by sending his Son, God incarnate, Jesus Christ, the God-man, fully human, yet without a sin nature, and yet fully divine, human so that he could die, God so his death meant something. After introducing his theme, he immediately jumps into the action, introducing John the Baptist with his preaching and baptizing ministry, introducing the baptism of Jesus Christ, where God the Father commends his Son, Jesus Christ, and the temptation of Jesus all follow the introduction to this book in verse 1. So Mark is fast-paced. The emphasis is on action. We can see that even in the little connector word that he uses, which is in Greek is euthys, and is translated immediately or at once. He uses that little connector word 42 times in this small book. Chapter 1 and verse 12 gives us an example of that. At once, we read, there is our word euthys. The Spirit sent him out into the desert, and he was in the desert 40 days, being tempted by Satan. He was with the wild animals, and angels attended him. One of the commentators said this, Mark's emphasis is on the speaking and acting Jesus. His account is vital, active, and Christ-centered. Larry Richards astutely says, Mark is the briefest and in some ways the most attractive of the four Gospels. His use of the present tense draws us into the scenes he sketches. Many believe this gospel was written to appeal to the Roman mind, shaped to emphasize Christ's strenuous life and manly characteristics. He reminds us over and over again that gentle Jesus was no weakling, but a man of courage, commitment, and complete active dedication to carrying out his mission here on earth. This is the Jesus Mark wants his first century readers and us to know. Jesus, the Son of God, yet a powerful, vigorous, and totally admirable man among men. Mark, the writer of this gospel, was the son of a well-to-do lady of Jerusalem whose name was Mary. It was her house that was a meeting place for the early church. We see that in Acts chapter 12 and verse 12, where the church met at her house to pray for Peter's release when he was arrested. We also learn about Mark that he was the cousin of Barnabas, who was taken along on the first missionary journey with Barnabas and Paul. It is thought that Mark may have been led to the Lord by Peter, according to 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 13. But we find in Acts 13 and verse 13 that Mark left the missionary group. He left Paul and Barnabas, and he returned home. Better than the word left is the word abandoned. He abandoned them. We don't know why. The scripture never tells us. It may have been fear for his life and the difficulties of spreading the gospel. It may have been the teaching of Paul or the leadership of Paul, but we don't know. For whatever reason, he abandoned Paul and Barnabas and he returned home. Because of this, later, when Paul and Barnabas discussed going on the second missionary journey, Paul refused to take John Mark along. We find the account of this in Acts chapter 15, verse 36. Sometime later, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let us go back and visit the brothers in all the towns where we preach the word of the Lord and see how they are doing." Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, with them, but Paul did not think it wise to take him because he had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not continued with them in the work. They had such a sharp disagreement that they parted company. Barnabas took Mark and sailed for Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and left, commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord. One of the lessons that we can take from Mark's life is that God can take our disappointments, God can take our failures, and He can use them for His glory and His purposes to build our faith and to prepare us for greater usefulness. The story of John Mark, the writer of the second gospel, is a story of failure and restoration to usefulness for God, a story that should encourage us all. We find that Paul and Barnabas and Paul and Mark later were reconciled. Colossians chapter 4 and verse 10, we find that Mark is with Paul in his Roman imprisonment. He tells the Colossians, "If Mark comes to you, welcome him." Philemon verse 24, Paul calls Mark his fellow worker. In 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 11, Paul says, "Bring Mark, for he is helpful to me." There was reconciliation after failure, and Mark was restored for usefulness to God. As I said a moment ago, it's a story that should encourage every one of us. There was no doubt a point in Mark's life where he must have thought he might not be used of God again. Mark failed spectacularly. Many of us have felt that way from time to time in our lives, haven't we? When we've failed God in some way, when we've been disappointed by something that God did not bring into our lives. But we need to remember the story of John Mark. We need to remember that disappointment and failure is what God uses to train us to be of greater usefulness to Him and what God uses to build our faith. We see that throughout the scripture. We have numerous examples. Joseph in the Old Testament, the favorite son of Jacob, the dreamer, was sold into slavery by his brothers. He rises to the top of Potiphar's house as its steward, and then he is falsely accused by Potiphar's wife and finds himself in prison. He went through all of this before he was raised to the leadership of the nation of Israel, second only to Pharaoh himself. We see it in the life of Moses, who was brought up in Pharaoh's house, meant for great things, who finds himself on the backside of the desert for 40 years listening to sheep. In his life, 80 years were spent in preparation for 40 years of ministry. We see in 1 Samuel Hannah's disappointment, her bitter disappointment at being unable to give Elkanah a child. But we see how God answered her prayer through the birth of Samuel. Warren Wiersbe says of this situation, "Out of this kind of sorrow and disappointment, God often builds great faith and sends special blessings." Failure and disappointment in our lives are not the end. What of Naomi in the book of Ruth? Her husband Elimelech and their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, went to live in Moab to escape the famine in Israel. There, Elimelech and Mahlon and Chilion all died, leaving Naomi alone with only her two daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth. Naomi's name means pleasant. When she decides to return to Israel along with her daughter-in-law, Ruth, and the people welcome her back, calling her pleasant, she says to them, "Don't call me pleasant, call me Mara," which means bitter. But little did she know how God would use this disappointment and failure in her life. As we see, the book ends with David's grandfather in her lap. Dr. Charles Ryrie says this, "Mark's biography proves that one failure in life does not mean the end of usefulness." Another has said, "Mark himself had many spiritual ups and downs before he was prepared to accept the full will of God for his own life." Remember, out of our failures, out of our disappointments, God will build great faith, and God will prepare us for greater usefulness for him. That still is the case today. In the book, The 1 Year Uncommon Life Daily Challenge, Tony Dungy, the writer, shares this about his autobiography, Quiet Strength. He says, "One of the things that caused me some reservations when deciding whether to write Quiet Strength was that I wasn't sure anything that I had done was worthy of mention. What parts of my life would interest readers? But then when Nathan and I began the process of writing the book, I realized that it wasn't just the joys that might be interesting for them to read about, but also some of the disappointments and heartaches and how I tried to walk on. What I went through might be a blessing and a comfort for others who have experienced similar trials. In fact, we opened the book detailing a terrifically low point in my life, being fired by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It was a simple decision to start there. We knew that every reader could relate to a time when personal dreams have been dashed." Also in the story of David Green, the founder of Hobby Lobby, in his book Leadership, Not by the Book, he shares this story. "Hobby Lobby saw steady growth from the late 1970s to the mid-1980s. We opened more stores and earned tens of millions in annual sales. The future looked fantastic. I even began to suspect that I might be a genius. And then came 1985. This time, God didn't speak to me as I sat by an airplane window. I didn't hear from him while flying 30,000 feet above the ground. On this occasion, I heard from him while huddled under my big mahogany desk with my office door closed, desperately praying. I left my phone unanswered because I already knew the callers, creditors demanding we pay bills we couldn't pay. The underside of my desk became a refuge. Under my desk, I turned to the only place I knew to go. I turned to God. I felt him saying to my heart, 'If you're so big, I'm going to let you have it by yourself.' I was a proud man. I had grown cocky from all my success. I assumed the gravy train would last forever." And then he says this, "God must destroy our arrogant pride if he is to bless the work of our hands. The Lord loves to bless humility, not smug self-confidence. It's hard to maintain a smug self-confidence when you're crouching under your desk, hiding from creditors, and pleading for God to help you out of the mess you've created for yourself. Today I can say I'm glad for those dark days. I needed to have my bubble burst." So many of us need encouragement in the midst of disappointments in our lives. We need encouragement in the midst of the failure of our lives. Let us take from these examples and from the example of Mark, the writer of the second gospel, that God can take our disappointments, God can take our failures, and He can use them for His glory, and He can use them for His purposes. He can build our faith and prepare us for greater usefulness.